This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Futuro.
I think it was a door that opened for then doing this, deciding to make an album and work in a more focused, I guess, political way. And I decided I was going to do it. You know, things just got worse. But I think there's an awakening process also that comes with the hard times.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, the Pan-Caribbean rebirth of Rita Indiana. Beloved for her gender-bending performances and experimental vision for Caribbean music, writer and musician Rita Indiana is a tour de force. With her latest album, Mandinga Times, Indiana is breaking an almost decade-long hiatus from the music scene. A fusion of punk, rock, rap, dembow, heavy metal, and reggaeton, Mandinga Times is a defiant manifesto, a reminder that Rita, who's known by her fans as La Montra, which means the monster, can't be tamed. The last time I saw Rita Indiana perform was in the summer of 2011. Playing songs from her debut album, El Juidero, the Dominican artist brought a new pulse to Central Park with her electric stage presence. At that point in time, Rita had just experienced a series of commercial successes, amassing her a powerful fan base. Rita Indiana had reached underground cult status in the Dominican Republic from earlier literary projects, but her music stardom became all-consuming. After 2 years of being literally mobbed by fans and having her personal life scrutinized by the media, Rita announced in 2011, "Me voy. I'm leaving music." She moved to Puerto Rico looking for a quieter life, and she returned to her roots as a writer. Her 2015 novel, La Mucama de Omicunle, translated as Tentacle in English, explored queer politics, colonialism, and poverty through a Caribbean sci-fi lens. Rita's political activism became focused on her home country. In January of 2017, the DR erupted in protests over an investigation that revealed executives from the Brazilian engineering company, Odebrecht, had bribed Dominican officials to the tune of millions of dollars. In the midst of massive street activism, Indiana responded by releasing a single, El Castigador, for The Punisher. The song was described as a war cry, demanding justice for Dominicans and denouncing corrupt Latin American politicians. That single opened the door for Rita's eventual return to music. Made in collaboration with Dominican dembow artist Kiko El Crazy and produced by Eduardo Cabra of Calle 13, Mandinga Times is Indiana's musical rebirth, La Montra Unleashed. I spoke with Rita Indiana about her new album, her queer pan-Caribbean identity, and why she left the music scene 10 years ago. Felicidades, Rita, for becoming una abuelita.
I know.
I mean, oh my God, what does that feel like?
It's crazy. It's like a crazy mad love. It's been a really powerful thing for me. And I understand all these magical things. Como que se le atribuyen a eso de ser abuela, you know, like to be a good witch, you got to be a grandma. So I'm on that journey now.
Rita, you know that like when you said that you were going to leave music, everybody was like, ¿cómo? Everybody was gossiping about it. Everybody was like, what? I mean, you do know that, right?
Yeah. It was because I was facing a lot of pressure, you know, to be something that I didn't want to be. I was in the Dominican Republic where I'm from, dealing with fame in a scale that I had never thought of. I couldn't leave the house without having a lot of people on top of me. And it was not good for me. I had a nervous breakdown because of it and because of other things. I was in the DR doing shows weekly and playing gigs that I shouldn't have played and hanging out with people I shouldn't have hung out with. It just got to the point where I said, I'm not enjoying this and I don't want to be famous like this. I want to be able to go out and listen to the conversation that the person in the restaurant is having next to me so I can write about it later, you know, and just be the one that's looking at, not the one that's looked at.
You said you had a mental breakdown. What does that look like? And I'm asking you that because I think sometimes we can get so swept up with the things that we are told that matter, like fame, like money, like everybody talking about you, but we don't necessarily talk about what that can cost you.
I think I gave 100 too many interviews to people I shouldn't have been giving interviews to. And I didn't come out in the Dominican media. I wasn't in the closet. I was out of the closet for years. And I spoke about my partner or whatever. And they took a little clip from an interview that I said, oh, yeah, mi novia, you know, my girlfriend, this and that. And they played that clip like over 100 times. I was afraid. I was like, wow, this is really disgusting. And I wasn't afraid because they were saying I was gay or I was a lesbian. It was because of the way they were doing it, you know, and the way they were exposing me. To come out of the closet is it's a very sophisticated process. For me, it was at least. It took many years for me to decide that I was going to tell my mother, that I was going to tell my friends, that I was going to tell my family, or how I was going to do it, you know. So this was very violent. And I said, you know what? There's no turning back. I'm going to have to man up. And, you know, just do what I have to do. I mean, people reacted in ways that I'm still amazed. The positive reaction I got from people in barrios and people who you would think, oh, they're homophobes, machistas, and with that in it. I got a lot of love. It was amazing. When I embraced it and I said, yes, sí, soy gay, tengo una pareja, ¿cuál es el problema? And I spoke about it freely. I got a lot of support from people that just came up to me, you know, evangelical doñas that were not preaching to me at all, and they just came up to me one day in the street, and they were like, oh, we like you because tú hablas la verdad, you know, you say the truth. We like people like you. So I got a lot of really pretty experiences, beautiful things that happened to me, but I got really, really skinny. I couldn't eat. No podía comer casi nada. I was very nervous, very fragile. I was crying a lot. I didn't like it. I wasn't feeling good, you know. I couldn't sleep at night. It was very draining. I wasn't reading. That was the worst thing. I wasn't reading or listening to music. When that happened, I was like, oh, no, something's wrong, you know.
Coming up on Latino USA, I talk with Rita Indiana about her interest in science fiction and how the pandemic has made her work more political. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Se roban 7 millones, dice el radio en la mañana, y escapan con el dinero, van del camino para La Habana. Se roban 7 millones, dice el radio en la mañana, y escapan con el dinero, van del camino para La Habana.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. And before the break, we were talking with Rita Indiana about why she left the music scene 10 years ago. Now we're going to talk about how she went back to her writing roots and over time reconnected with music as a way to express her political thoughts. Let's get back to the conversation. Your work now as a writer is really super sci-fi, super futuristic. It could not be more far away from the experience of being overwhelmed by fame. And in fact, it's not that different from your new album, which is Mandinga Times, and the rest of your music, really. So tell me a little bit about your interest in the genre of futuristic sci-fi as a writer, as a creator, as an artist.
The only way that I could speak about so many things at once, like in Tentacle, La Mucama de Mikule, was having this sci-fi element. I mean, I didn't go out and say, I'm going to write a sci-fi novel. I just wanted to deal with issues of colonialism. And you can't speak about colonialism without speaking of all the time frames involved in slavery, for example, and how that affects us and how that happened. I wanted to speak about the body and like how do you speak about the body without speaking about, for us immigrants, being one body in one place. For example, my aunt, she lived in New York. She came with all her bags in the summer full of presents for everybody. So in Santo Domingo, she was the Santa Claus person, you know, who brought joy and things for everybody. But the Ayuya in New York was a factory worker, you know, who had pain in her legs and couldn't walk in the winter and had migraine almost every day of her life. So, you know, how do you write about this multiplicity of the body and of the meaning in capitalism? I also wanted to write about art, and then we go about time again and the history of art and what it has meant and what it means for an artist that's making it, you know? So the only way I found to talk about these things was through time travel, not through a machine or like human scientific experimentation, but through nature. Also, another thing I wanted to talk about was Afro-Caribbean religious systems and how sophisticated they are. The Orishas are basically forces of nature. They're living deities. They exist. So that's another thing that I put into the novel. And all these things, the only way I found to talk about them was through a sci-fi lens.
So you talk about taking this break from music, but even while you took this break in 2017, you drop a single. It's in the middle of political turmoil in the Dominican Republic. The name of the song is El Castigador, which is like the Punisher. Clavo con clavo, soga con sal, toro con rumbo. So what happened there? Because you were so clear about not doing very public, big thing music. And yet at that time, you drop this single, which gets a lot of attention because of the moment that you drop it in.
That was a little door that opened for music. It was a very special moment, like you said, in the DR. We've been struggling with impunity. And I come from a country that has extreme poverty. People who have no water or electricity and, you know, don't have a... Tienen un piso de tierra. I don't know how to say that in English.
A dirt floor.
A dirt floor. In the capital, there's like thousands of people who live this way. And then you have these politicians just like scheming and stealing, and it's just, it's gross. I had to say something about it, and in a way, convocar and summon the spirits of El Castigador, meaning the spirits of the todos los que han luchado, those who have fought for freedom and justice in this continent. Many, many people who have given their blood and their lives for a just cause.
So why did you choose the title Mandinga? And what does Mandinga actually mean to you as a Dominican artist? And what do you want us to understand about that?
Well, Mandinga is a word that is used in many places in Latin America to name different things. It's one of the biggest ethnic groups that came to the Americas during the slave trade. And it's a word that is used for many things, like for a Black person, for a witch, for a queer person, for someone who's hypersexual. A beating is also like Coen Mandinga. And there's a lot of towns and neighborhoods in Latin America that are called Mandinga. The album title is Mandinga Times, so it's kind of like the times that we're living, you know. And when I started making the album, it was kind of like a joke. Oh, Mandinga Times, sure. Yeah, so cool. And then there was no irony in it. We're in medio de una pandemia, and it's really happening. But I feel I've learned faster, and I've become more involved in the politics that affect me and affect my community through my art, maybe, and through other ways because of the lockdown. And this has changed the way that I interpreted the title of the album and the album itself. Like at the beginning, I was like, oh, Mandinga has to do with, you know, our African roots and minorities and this and that. Then I read this philosopher, trans feminist, his name is Paul B. Preciado. And he speaks about people, not of the margins, but of the crossing. La gente del cruce. I love that. It includes immigrants, trans people, queer people, people who live in the crossroads, the place that El Egua is a sacred place for many Afro-Caribbean religions. Hmm. So now Mandinga, to me, she's like this character that I created because of the name of the album. Mandinga also means to me like the demonization of the people of the crossings. And I'm trying to subvert that by becoming that demonization, you know, becoming kind of like this weird creature that's coming to tell you, you know what, awaken, let's do what we need to do to fix this thing because it doesn't look pretty.
So your title track, Mandinga Times, you work with Kiko El Crazy, who's bringing a more kind of eccentric sound to dembow. Tell us about working with Kiko El Crazy and about playing around with dembow and what that was like.
Well, Mandinga Times, I wanted to make a song with Alibaba, which is the rhythm that you hear there. It's a rhythm that they play in the Dominican Carnival. It's a very urban phenomenon. Now it's like everywhere. And it's played with snare drums and kick drums that are, most of them are handmade. It has some elements of folklore, of Afro-Dominican rhythms, but it's a thing of itself and it's an urban phenomenon, which is what I like. Not urban as the mainstream urban music genre. I'm talking about something that happens in the city. So I wanted to mix that with a little bit of punk rock riffs. And Kiko, it was like love at first sight. I saw him. His videos, and I was like, wow, I like this dude, man. He's just weird. And I wanted to make something with him, and I called him, and he was super excited. He's like, oh, la montra, yeah, let's do this. And he put himself out there, and I left him the most punk rock parts of the song, and he just killed it. I think it's my favorite song of the album.
So there's a boom that's happening right now in terms of fusion and Afro roots music in the DR. From your last album to this album, you've been playing a lot with these sounds. So it's like another experience, another renacer. So what's that like for you to be seeing that?
I just got goosebumps when you were asking the question. It's a very beautiful thing what's happening in the DR. And I think it speaks of maybe us finally coming to terms with the fact that we are Afro-descendants, you know? And it's very beautiful to see all these young kids from very different backgrounds, blanquitos y gente del barrio, mezclao, you know, mixing different classes to make these projects.
As you know, Latin America is very proud of its different countries. Let's just put it mildly. But there is also a bit of nationalism. Puerto Rico, le encanta los puertorriqueños. Dominicans are super proud to be Dominican. Cubans over here, Jamaicans. But you really have now lived a pan-Caribbean experience. And it feels like that is, as an artist, as a writer, and as a musician, you're kind of saying, es que soy del Caribe. You're making that on purpose. That's a very specific thing that you're wanting to communicate.
Yeah, definitely. These little islands, they're separated by water, but they're mostly separated by colonialism. We have very similar histories. Our differences are very little, and the things that connect us are amazingly huge. This culture developed in the same scenario. It's white people who came, and they brought enslaved people's work for them and massacred the originarios who were here. And I mean, is this a history of Latin America? I mean, it's a history of half of the world, basically. Right. The Pan-Caribbean thing for me is, in a way, questioning this colonial distribution of space and of bodies. Music has been a very important learning tool for me in terms of my identity as a Caribbean person and what it means to be in our history and how rich the cultures of the enslaved people that were brought here were and how sophisticated.
You know, you talked about being overwhelmed by your fans, that you couldn't almost breathe. And now your novel's getting increasingly popular and awarded. So I'm not so sure about what you said about walking away from the fandom and how you deal with that, because it's like, the truth is that you have this iconic status. So how are you processing that right now? And as you're thinking about what your next move is as an artist?
Well, one thing I did was move to Puerto Rico because I needed the space. Just people say, oh, this tall, lanky person lives in my building. You know, she's so weird. But they don't know who I am. You know, that's amazing. I love that. I'm feeling more comfortable. I've grown a lot and I've matured a lot. And I think I can handle things better. And I don't do things that I don't want to do anymore. I feel more prepared to deal with that and to just explore what a community of followers can give you in terms of being able to put a message out there and create change.
No matter where you're from or where you're living, you're an extraordinary artist that pushes us all. So I'm wondering if you could go back a la Rita Indiana novel kind of way, what would you tell esa pequeña Rita, that younger Rita? What would you tell her?
I wouldn't tell her anything, because if I told her something in time travel laws, that would change the outcome and I wouldn't be here talking to you. So I wouldn't say anything.
Hopefully we'll see each other soon and be able to give each other hugs. La chiquita con la alta. Rita Indiana, thank you so much for joining me on Radio USA. This episode was produced by Jeannie Montalvo and Carly Rubin and edited by Marta Martinez. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Andrea López Cruzado, Julieta Martinelli, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Judith Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our intern is Oscar De León. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Bye.
Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. And the Wincote Foundation.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. You sent us your questions about the COVID-19 vaccine, and now we've got answers. We address your concerns over how to make a post-pandemic future possible.
My question is, are vaccines only available for U.S. citizens and legal permanent residents?
That's this week on Latino USA.
From PRX.